Everybody, and welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Theon Nojoy.
I see what you did there. And welcome to the show.
He's just not a... Is he someone you're going to invite to a party?
No. He's Reek now, so you don't want to invite a smelly man named Reek.
I actually feel bad for him.
He does have waiter abilities, though, now. So...
But here's he brought it on himself. Even the previously on Game of Thrones shown what he did.
You could see his remorse when he turned around and saw the burnt bodies. He's like, oh, I shouldn't have ordered that. That was a mistake.
But he did it. He did it.
I don't even like beef jerky.
What?
Too soon?
What? Yeesh.
Where do you think spam comes from?
It's people! It's people!
Spam or Bram? Or Bram? Bram.
Oh, man, you just...
What? I'm saying what people are thinking. That's my job. People are afraid to say it. They're like going, oh, I was going to say that, but I was afraid to. The PC world.
Oh, Lord.
Anyway, he just kill him already. I still think he's going to kill Ramsay. I still think he kills him.
Possibly.
At this point, it's pushing towards that way.
Yeah. I just think he sees what Sansa... I think because deep down he has a heart. Because remember, I forget the guy's name when he was telling Theon to stop doing what he was doing. He goes, I know you. This isn't you. He was doing things he really wasn't capable of, you know... Wasn't his personality to do it. He did them anyway. And I think deep down, he'll kill Ramsay.
We'll see. We will see. But yes, we're halfway through this season of Game of Thrones. Like, Game of Thrones just seems to go by so quick. It's only 10 episodes. But
it goes too fast.
Yeah, you always want more.
But the episode titled Kill the Boy.
See my comment on Facebook?
No.
I thought it was a title for a Blue Bloods episode. At least I was hoping.
That's a deep reference there, if you don't listen to Jay and Jack TV. But anywho... what do you say we get into this Game of Thrones recap?
Do it.
All right, here we go. We start off with a Grey Worm somehow is still alive for now.
Oh, yeah. I
think he's going to die.
I did, too. I thought he was going to be dead, for sure.
No, I thought he was going to live.
Oh, okay.
You thought he was going to
live? Back and forth with it.
You optimistic? Wow.
Yeah, every now and then. How about hope?
Yeah, we see Missandei sitting, just gazing at him, watching over him. And then it turns quickly to Danny also as well over the body of Ser Barristan on his funeral pile.
Yep.
And she's sad, but it quickly turns to anger.
Yeah.
Of her just really mad that her closest advisor, a man who crossed a continent to serve her, using her words.
Her friend.
Her friend, yeah. And yeah, exactly. And it was like her only link to her past, too. Because right. He was telling her about her brother, about things that he had witnessed. And she's mad that these cowards and behind masks just killed him so, you know, nonchalantly.
Vengeance will be swift. Yeah. So she says, rounding up all the leaders of all the families. And his daughter says, but I'm the leader of my family.
I'm a leader. Are you sure about that?
So she takes them to where, and Viserys and Rhaegal, is that the two dragons?
Yes.
Let's just say things get a little hot.
I love it, though. Every time they've taken them to the pits, though, I love the whoever's doing the CGI. I love it because I love just seeing the two eyes glow and then slowly you see the rest of the face coming to screen. I think it's a great shot every time they do it.
I did like that it was the bald-headed guy who got
fried. Yeah, well, you know.
It's okay. It's the ball-headed guy. You can go ahead and kill him, and nobody is going to care. I keep making my case every week, and I don't even have to make it anymore.
Well, hair's bad for the digestion, you know. So,
but doesn't
plus is there anything worse than burnt hair smell?
Oh, exactly.
If that intense heat, do you smell it? Because you got flesh too.
Yeah, which
would be or is it easier to rip it apart? Rip a body apart when there's not hair. Because you don't want hair in your teeth. That's just nasty. But the bald guy, of course, he's the one that has to go. In fact, I rewound it just to see. I go, did they kill the bald guy? Yep, it was the bald guy.
It's like the dragons rip him apart, but then when she's leaving, it looks like there's two bodies there. I was like, that guy was, he wasn't that big, but no. It looked like there was two huge.
I think the body swells when it gets thrown on fire. I think that's how
it's like
works.
A ballpark frankfurt, plumps when you cook it.
Bam.
But you know, the key is that she's trying to really instill some fear into these families. Like, if you're behind it, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
You know?
But then it's Histar says the Valar Morghulis or whatever, the all men must die.
Yeah.
Which makes her seem apprehensive to it a little bit.
Yeah, I think he's kind of calling her bluff at that moment, because I think she really wanted all of them to have fear, but he was like, oh, go ahead and kill me then. So it kind of made her back off. And then the only thing left for her to say was, well, I don't want to overfeed them. So
yeah.
I'll just wait till tomorrow to kill you.
So. Yeah. And then we cut to Sam reading about what's going on in Daenerys' world.
Right. Yeah, he's reading most likely a note from a raven, the latest news of Daenerys in Meereen to Master Aemon, because he's blind. He's 100 years old. And, you know, a lot of people, I'm not sure if everyone forgets, but, you know, Master Aemon is a Targaryen. And
oh, he is?
Yeah, you didn't know that. Oh, okay.
I did not know.
Your audio kind of cut out there, Jack.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I didn't know that.
I'll get into this a little bit in the book section.
Okay.
But they do talk about it, like, in season one when Jon first goes to the Wall and he's trying to make a decision of going to help his avenge Ned's death and all that. And he's talking to him on the Wall saying, when it was my chance, I went to when the Targaryens were dying. And Jon realizes, like, oh, my God, you're aiming on Targaryen. That's why he has that, even though he's old, that's why he has that silvery hair, because all Targaryens have this silvery blonde hair. But yeah, he's the, and that's why he seemed upset. Like, you know, one Targaryen left in the world with no family, no one to help her. It's a tragic thing. And, you know, because he wants to help her so bad, because this is the only family he has left. So, but then you kind of also, it also, has a little bit of a weird little thing there, because as soon as he says it's the last Targaryen, and then surely enough, Jon enters.
I know, it's almost like they're hitting you over the head with it.
It's like, yeah, it is. It's like, come on, just go ahead
again,
and say it already.
It's a theory, so it's not legit or anything, but they're kind of hitting us over the head with the symbolism there. So it's almost
hitting
too
them
much.
Over the head, they're going to say, oh no, sorry.
That's what I'm saying. It's almost like they're going to do a bait and switch.
But Jon. Because, I mean, yeah, because Master Aemon is a maester for one. That's their job, is to heal people and give advice, because they're wise and have read every book and are master things. Wants his opinion on a decision that he's worried about and that could possibly divide the Night's Watch. But Master Aemon just says, do it, you know, that you'll find strength in what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And which is where we then the line is given, where we get the title of the episode, Kill the Boy, which stop being a child, just be a man and live with the decisions that you're going to have to make.
Was that from the book?
It is. And I'll get into that later in the book section. It's actually a little bit longer of a speech that he gives that relates to Targaryen history. But yeah, it is from the book. And it's actually in a different scene in the books.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm not going to get into even in this episode, because I still think they're going to try to do this with Master Aemon and Sam in not probably this season, but maybe the next season.
Okay.
So.
All right. Good to know. All right. So then he meets with Thormund and has some propositions for him and the Free Folk.
Yes. Jon is inquiring about the location of the Free Folk that probably either fled the battle or didn't come at all to the battle at the Wall, and he wants to know where they're at. So he wants Tormund to go north to bring them back to safety below the Wall.
Why? Because winter is coming.
Spoiler.
Well, I mean, he's mainly worried that, you know, the White Walker is going to kill these people, and then they'll turn into white. It's just be adding more men to their ranks.
Right. He offers them actually a pretty good deal. He's like, I'll give you land that you can farm. All I want for you to do is, when the time comes, I want the Free Folk to fight with the Night's Watch against the White Walkers. because they, I mean, the Night's Watch are severely undermanned, and they're going to need all the people they can to fight an undead army.
Yeah.
But, you know, and of course, Tormund resists because he thinks it's the same thing Stannis is kind of offering him. Like, no, you're just going to enslave us. You're going to do this. But no, he goes, don't think of it that way. You need to think of the lives of your people.
Well, he said, no one will kneel before you. And he goes, I don't. And Snow says, I don't want them to.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but Tormund finally does agree, though. Yeah. And he's, you know, he said, I'll do it. And I have to go to Hardhome, which Hardhome is on the eastern side of Westeros, on the northeastern side. So they have to get the boats from Eastwatch by the Sea, go north to this port to get the people. And but he only agrees to it if Jon comes, because that's the only way that the Wildlings will believe it, is if the Lord Commander is there to say, I'm not going to kill you.
So yeah, I see where Thorman's coming from on that.
Oh, absolutely.
So then he discusses it with everybody in the Night's Watch, and they're not too pleased about it.
They're not having it, and I don't blame them. You know, it's, I mean, you literally just, all your training, your entire purpose is to kind of kill these people, and they've killed your friends, and all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, we're going to invite them in. You know, all of your friends died in vain.
Which, like anything, like even a war, you have people that fight, you know, they fight in a war in real life. They still hate those people the day they die because they're fighting against them. But.
I knew people in my hometown that fought World War II that still hated Japanese, and they were 90-something years old. You know, and you're like, wow. You know.
Yeah.
But, let's see here. But John makes, like Jay just said, John makes a really good point of saying, look, if we don't let them in, then it's just more undead people that we're going to have to fight later. So let's have them on our side. To which, of course, the Night Watch is just grumbling and doesn't like it.
Yeah.
And
well, it's tough in anything to get people who don't like each other to, you know, work together. You see, that's, you know, it just, peace talks break down all the time because people hate each other. Just they'd rather be dead than work with people they don't like.
Yeah. The point is, though, with this scene, even when it goes to his steward, Oily, I don't know, he's a new character, but is that basically even his closest apprentice doesn't even want him.
Who looks up to him.
But again, I see where they're coming from too. But Jon Snow has the right, you know, idea behind it. It's like, listen, regardless, you don't want to give them more people, and he's making the tough choice but the right choice.
What if you made this plan? Okay, we kill the White Walkers, and then after that, we can fight each other. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of these decision makers, they don't go far enough or further enough with making their case. You know, you could easily say, look, I'm going to give you safety temporarily. You fight with us, and then you can choose. Do you want to live below the wall, or do you want to live above the wall? It's your life. It's your freedom, but you'll be alive. You know?
Yeah. It comes down to a trust issue, though.
Yeah.
You know, probably that, but then it won't make as much drama if he's really good at being a leader.
True. Yeah, he knows nothing. But the point is, John is alone. You know, that's the feeling they want you to have, is that John is alone. Like, you know, no one is with him on this.
Yeah. We then go to Pod and Brienne, who have a nice little view of Winterfell.
It was.
And Brienne is kind of still trying to find ways to protect Sansa, or at least warn her that she's in danger.
I kind of laughed at this scene just because I thought it was a little corny. Brienne wants she wants to protect Sansa. She swore an oath, and then we have this innkeeper come in who's really nobody, and then she gives him this whole speech about how I swore an oath to her. And it's like, wow, your third time's a charm. You're really just trying to win over this innkeeper. No one believed you the first two times.
Well, you know, you keep trying.
Yeah.
You don't give up.
First, you don't succeed. You try again.
I'm sure there'll be a dog down the road. And the dog will be like Lassie, that'll be a convince him or something. She's not going to give up. That's the point I'm getting at.
Yeah,
she's not a quitter.
And I have a feeling that all of this is going to tie together exactly at the right point where you, like what you're saying with Ramsay and Reek, and somehow Brienne and Pod will be there at the exact same time when all the rescuing or whatever is needed. But,
and they'll screw things up.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
The innkeeper gave him away.
and then we go to Winterfell with Ramsay, And one of his mistresses is Miranda, I think.
Miranda, yeah. She's a new character. She's a new character as well to the show.
She wasn't okay. The one last year where they were chasing after the girl.
Yes.
She was.
I'm not sure if it's the same actress or not, but it's the same person. Yeah, where she's the dog. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But she's upset because he promised to marry me. Do you think she's pretty? And doesn't go too well for old.
Well, he's Miranda, honest. So. He goes, "Well, I'm not stupid. I'm not dumb. I mean, she's good looking. What do you want me to say?"
I'm not blind. Yeah.
I'm not blind. He played this actor, I don't know his name off the top of my head. He plays crazy very well. He's almost too well. Yeah, he's got that psycho look on when he just kind of gets when he was well we'll get later on that scene, but great actor. He's a very good actor.
Yeah.
I hope it's acting.
Yeah. If I was an actor in this show, the two characters I would want to play would be the Ramsay Bolton or Theon Greyjoy, just because of the diversity of the character of, especially with Theon being like this arrogant, confident guy to all of a sudden just be nobody. Right. Yeah.
And you kind of look like Theon Greyjoy. You have a little bit of some of his features, I feel. I think you could play him.
What feature are you talking about?
Whoa, you have to go straight to that, huh?
Well, I'm just saying. I didn't know if you
went to... No, just like his...
I don't know.
His face. Nick and the actor who plays Theon have similar face structures.
Oh, you know? Me and Theon. Oh,
yeah, okay. You and Theon. Yeah, the jawline's very similar, okay, I feel.
I was just wondering. Okay. I know you... Didn't you guys room at Comic-Con?
I don't think we have. Did we?
Only one shower, right?
Oh, no. We never roomed together, but we... Okay.
I don't need to know anymore.
Yeah.
We've been in the same hotel many times, but you guys were always you, Cliff, and Jana.
Right, and but no, we slept in the same room one night when we had reservation, not for the first night.
That's right.
That's the only time.
Okay, and it was only one restroom, right? One shower, one...
It was that really, really weird restroom that had all the open slats, and you're like, you can see into the restroom. But
that is true. We have strict... number two rules.
That's true.
it just kind of seeped out.
That's the problem with the slat system. It doesn't contain.
We had that in Hawaii.
Yep.
And we had that, which was just me and my wife, but you had Cliff in your room.
Yep.
Who would take showers at night.
That's what I was about. You stole my line, yeah. But Cliff, the rules don't apply to Cliff. No.
No.
Noises, smells, towels, I don't care. It's my world.
Yeah. We then go to Sansa passing the time by staring at a wall. And
that's what I wondered too. I was like, she's just sitting there at a table with no book, no TV. It's like, what is she doing? It's just this darkened room.
The North Remembers woman tells her that she's not alone. And she's never in need. Light a candle in the broken tower.
You know, that woman's just angling to make shirts, T-shirts. And sell them on the street corner. The North remembers. What do you think? I think that's your plan.
I think that was the third season poster, actually, was the North remembers.
Was it?
Yeah.
The King of the North! Oh, crap, he's dead! Who do we do now?
But yeah, that's the broken tower, the top of the broken tower. It's the same tower that Bran was pushed from in season one.
Okay.
So, just so you know. That's why you see, like, right then after that, Sansa go look at that same tower that Bran fell from.
Yeah, okay.
And then good old Miranda has a little devious play that she wants to do.
Yeah, like she kind of plays a little, plays nice with her, like, oh, I like your dress, and ha-ha, and yeah.
You made it? Wow.
Wow, yeah, come with me, I want to show you something cool.
Well, I like how she said something about her mom taught her, and she goes, oh, it's at least your mom taught you. I'd rather have my mom alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nice. Sansa was actually quite witty this episode.
Yeah. Yes. So she takes her to the dog kennels, and Reek appropriately has his own little kennel.
Would you have gone in there by yourself?
Heck no.
I don't think so. Not with those dogs.
Go to the end. There's a surprise. What was going to happen? Good news?
No way. There's going
to be a cake there, some ice cream.
And then we have, right after that, Reek dressing Ramsay.
Yeah, this was a scene I enjoyed, but I really... It's the one thing that I think the show has failed on. I mean, they showed the torture stuff pretty well a couple seasons ago, but they haven't shown the true psychological scarring that Ramsay did to Theon. Because Ramsay knows Theon up head to tail. I mean, exactly what he's thinking, and you see it there. And, you know, he's like, what are you holding back? And he's like, Sansa saw me. And so when he asks for his hand, something they can't really do on the show, but Theon really should only have about 7 fingers and I think 7 toes or 6 toes, something like that, which is why he walks funny. Okay. Because every time that Theon has tried to be Theon or be clever, Ramsay would just cut off a finger or a toe and say, no, you're weak. You're doing as I tell. And so that's what this is about. Like, you know, get on your knees and give me your hand. Because you want to believe that he's just going to cut it off. Like, oh, you lied to me right then, so you lose a finger.
Oh, okay.
And it really, it should be a really intense moment of like, oh my God, he's going to cut off another finger. But then all of a sudden, that's why Theon gives me that look. Like, you didn't cut off my finger? Wow. I mean, he totally expected to lose it right then. So,
but I did, this is why I think part I was about the actor, his facial expression. When he just had that psychotic look on his face, I said, "That is just amazing." I felt like, "Oh, this guy's nuts. This guy's crazy." I thought it was great acting.
I do. I agree. To me, they're the most interesting characters. I mean, I like Littlefinger and Varys as well, but I think there's a lot of layers to them.
Right.
And then we have a Bolton dinner, and Sansa is invited, and. Awkwardness ensues.
Well, what family dinner is not awkward?
That's true.
But yeah, you see Ramsay weirdly, but trying to be nice, gives a toast to Sansa, like to our marriage, and they're all happy. And then
was he really trying to be nice?
No.
But
I don't think he can. I mean, he did one of his first meeting, but he is who he is. He can't. He's nuts. He can't do. He can't do nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, he has Reek apologize.
Well, hold on.
Sorry.
No worries. But like, it's just like, because it's another witty thing I loved about Sansa saying that, you know, like Lady Bolton also tries to be nice, saying like, you know, it's supposed to be strange, you know, you being being in a strange new place. And of course, Sansa just snaps back like, this place isn't strange. This is my home. Like,
you know? The people in it are strange.
Yeah. And then she turns and looks at Ramsay.
Yeah. So, yeah. But then Theon comes in with the wine and Ramsay inquires to Sansa, like, are you still mad after he killed your family? You know, like,
after you murdered your family. Your brothers. I thought Theon should have said, I didn't kill him.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if he will. Because, like, you know, this isn't in the books. So, and Theon and Sansa have never seen each other since all this. So, right. I'm wondering if this will come about. The same as with Brienne wanting to tell, should have told Sansa that Arya was alive. What if that would have happened and now Sansa would know that Bran, Rickon, and Arya are still alive? How would that change things?
Because Theon could just say, look, it was just those two orphan kids.
Yeah.
That's what we burned. It wasn't your brothers.
It's not smart, though, because I think if he does tell them, the Boltons would go, you know, looking for it, yeah, because they have to kill them because they are Stark heirs.
But wouldn't that add some more drama to the show, though?
Oh, absolutely, if they want to go hunt them down. But it would be very hard because Rickon's in White Harbor and Bran's in a tree, so it's a bit hard to find, especially Bran.
Or Theon kills Ramsay and then tells her brothers are still alive.
Yeah, I mean, that could happen. But yeah, I think, yeah.
I'm not trying to write the story for him. I'm sure he's capable of doing it himself, but that would be okay with that.
I mean, that could easily happen, but you'd have to have Theon really become Theon again. Because, I mean, right now he's not even a shadow of himself.
No, I just think there's something – I think he – I just keep hoping there's a little bit of Theon left in there. And not that I liked Theon before, but you just feel sorry for him.
Mm. Yeah.
But Ramsay, yeah, then forces Reek to apologize to Sansa, saying that he's a new man. That, you know, his name is Reek now. He's no longer Theon, which is a really tense moment because Sansa doesn't understand any of it. He doesn't know why Theon is the way he is.
Right.
So you can just see her looking at him like, who is this this guy.
Yeah.
But then of course to make it even more awkward after the apology, Ramsay then points out that Theon is the closest thing to Sansa has left the family, and that Theon is going to give away her during their wedding.
Oh my gosh.
Is he going to bathe at least?
I would assume. Hopefully they would give him a bath before.
Maybe that's when he goes off and kills Ramsay.
Woohoo!
at the wedding. It's a wedding. People have to die.
That's true. Yeah. It's not a good wedding unless three people die.
Exactly.
Let's see here. Then
Roose follows up with some news of his own.
He does. He states some good news that him and Lady Bolton are expecting a son. Which, of course, Ramsay is not pleased at this. It makes him a little worried, and you see it in the way he sets down the cup and everything. But also, we also see Sansa give a little smirk on her face too. Because this is a potential problem for Ramsay if it actually is a boy, because he, even though he's legitimized, he's not a true-born Ramsay.
Right.
So.
So then afterwards, there's a bit of a conversation between the two of them.
But didn't this also hurt Sansa?
Because
Ramsay loses power.
Right. It would hurt Sansa if she marries him, but she's banking on Stannis coming down, remember?
Yeah.
That's right.
So. Then go ahead, Jay.
So then we go kind of after dinner, his dad kind of slaps him on the wrist for how he behaved. But there's still a bit of a bonding moment between the two of them. Ramsay is so weird and creepy that it's weird that his dad is still supportive of him.
I liked this scene because it was so odd. It was almost kind of like the Stannis and Shireen scene, but not as warm at all.
Right.
Because I loved it. Like Ramsay inquires about the birds and the bees, like, how did you do it with her?
Are you sure she's pregnant?
Yeah. Of course, he's just worried about his position, and Roose knows this. And then he gives him this, oh, I raped your mother. Don't worry about it. You're my son.
I almost shrugged her up, hung her, but I decided.
Why not?
What a nice guy. Now you see how Ramsay is who he is.
Right. He didn't grow up with a mother. He grew up just being, no warmth at all. But you do see it at the end, though, with Roose telling him that the North is ours. It's yours and mine. We have to defend it. And so he's kind of reassuring him that nothing will come between Roose and Ramsay. And I'll tell you a little bit more in the book section about things. But that's the scene.
That is thine scene. We then go to Gilly. Gilly. Starts asking about the books in the library. Are these all the books in the world?
In the world. And you feel sorry for them both because Sam is just such a meathead. Not really a meathead, but just he has no idea how to talk to people. And she wants to know, and she's like, no, this is a fairly small library. The biggest one's at the Citadel. And she's like, oh, where's the Citadel? it's an old town. And then, of course, Gilly doesn't know this. She's lived her whole life in a little hut with her dad. She doesn't know where Old Town is either.
Yeah.
So naturally, she just feels dumb.
And then Stannis arrives and gives some honor to Sam and that his father beat his brother.
Was a great warrior.
Right.
Are you a great warrior? I read.
I beat a White Walker. There's that.
Yeah. So hey, chalk one up for me.
Yeah, with Dragonglass, and so Stannis, because the Dragonstone, which is the little island off of King's Landing, is basically made of Dragonglass, and so he grew living there for so long, he understands what it is and its value, but he just doesn't understand why that would kill White Walkers, which to me it makes pretty sense because it's lava made of fire killing something made of ice, but whatever. Put two and two together.
Isn't that the title of the opening theme song is Fire and Ice, isn't it?
What's the name of the books?
Book series is Fire and Ice.
There we go. Yeah. So there.
There's also a little thing back to Gilly and Sam talking that I thought was interesting, was just the fact that because you see Maester Aemon earlier saying, "I'm getting old," and you also see Sam saying, "I wanted to be trained as a maester, but then I joined the Night's Watch."
Right.
So that could be a little bit of foreshadowing of Sam's future, if you want to think about it that way.
Ah, there you go. Good point.
Oh, and then basically he tells Stannis, though, that he's been reading nonstop about the Army of the, and that he's seen the Army of the Dead, and he's researching the best he can to try to figure out how to beat them.
Yeah.
But Stannis gives him approval and says, keep reading.
And then Stannis is ready to go, but Davos wants to wait for Jon to come back.
Right. And it's they're both actually wise decisions, I think, because Davos wants to hope that some of the wildlings will join them to invade Winterfell. But Stannis is thinking more logistically. Winter's coming. They don't have the food, things like that. We need to get going while we still have the advantage of hitting the Boltons before they get any kind of force.
Yeah.
Yeah, some support.
Yeah. This is also something in the books that's I mean, it's fine. For the show, it's perfect. You know, like, basically, we're getting the army, we're marching north. But in the books, they actually do a little bit more recruiting amongst the mountain men of the north and some other things to get their army a little bit bigger. But it's really irrelevant for the show.
Mm-hmm.
But just...
So then we have Grey Worm wakes up and tells Missandei that he failed.
Yeah. Short scene.
She says you did.
Yeah,
he thought I'd never see her again. It's like, eh.
Right. Yeah, like, well, the thing is that, you know, you need to know, like, the differences. You know, this stuff is not true in the show because Missandei she's like 12 years old in the books. So she doesn't really love him. And why would you love him? He's a eunuch, you know? But the way that the Unsullied are trained is not to have emotions. You know, they shouldn't feel anything. They're just there to do their job, and that's the only thing that they're honor bound. So he's ashamed that he actually had a feeling. That's really what he's ashamed of. Because he actually cared about someone, which was her. And so that's a huge – it's something against something he's ever known. So that's what he's trying to say, is that he actually felt love. So, and that's why she gives him a little kiss. And we'll see where that goes.
And then we go to Danny, who seeks some advice for Missandei.
Yeah, like
because all her advisors are gone, basically.
Exactly. Like, Danny and Missandei talk strategy, and she's saying she's conflicted because Barristan always urged mercy, whereas in Daario wants to kill all the four masters. So she's really desperate for advisors, and I guess it's a good thing that Jorah and Tyrion are on their way because she's really at a dead end, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
But Missandei, though, gives her really the best advice she can do because she doesn't have any experience in this. So she just says, I've seen you make choices that only you could make because it was your wisdom, not theirs, that came through. So Danny then visits – I never say his name right, but it's his Adara.
His Dar,
yeah. Yeah, it's the one name I'm like, I have no idea.
That's better than me.
We see him open his cell, and he starts begging for his life, whereas in once before he said, you know, all men must die. But he admits that he wanted to die bravely if he was going to die. So, but now he wants to live. So Danny informs him that she was wrong. She wants to honor the traditions and has decided to reopen the fighting pits, but only to free men, and that in order to forge a lasting bond with the Marine people, she is now going to marry a member of the oldest families, which leads you to believe that she's going to marry him.
Mm. So,
this also is slightly different too from the books that I'll get into later. But.
Okay. Well, good. All right, and then we go to Jorah and Tyrion, and they go to Valyria.
Yes, Jorah continues to give him the silent treatment on the boat, prompting, I thought, was the best line of the entire show, which was the long, sullen silences and the occasional punch in the face. The Mormont way. But Tyrion, once again, inquires about wine. And he all but admits that he's an alcoholic, which you've never really seen Tyrion do. But before he actually admits that he needs a drink, he starts to look around and realizes that they're in Old Valyria, which is where Dany's family originally was from hundreds of years ago, but has been destroyed by the Doom, which was a series of volcanic eruptions that destroyed their way of life.
Ah, that's cool. It seems like from what everything they were talking about, I was like, man, I wish we could go back in time and kind of see this at its peak, you know? Because it seems like it's almost similar to what, like, Mayan civilizations or Egyptians, where it's just like they did these great things that even in today's world we don't understand how they did it.
Absolutely. And, you know, in the books it's never shown. It's only talked about in myths. So this is a scene that they changed. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually glad that they did, even though it's not exactly how you picture it to be in the books, and I'll get into that later. But yeah, it's just neat to see that, because exactly like you're saying, it's like Egyptian, it's technology that they can't even do today. It's like Valyrian steel, which is the most valuable thing right now in Westeros, which is the swords that like Brienne has that mm-hmm. you don't even need to sharpen it because it's so such good steel. They can't even replicate it anymore. So, but yeah, Jorah says that they're going to go through this area, which is extremely dangerous because pirates don't go through these waters.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see them traveling through the ruins of Valyria, and then Tyrion, nice credit to the writers. He does give a short little history in a poem form of what happened to Valyria, so kind of informs the viewers. And then before he finishes, you see Drogon fly over to Tyrion's amazement, you know.
Yeah.
Which was a really, really good scene, because I can't imagine either never seeing a dragon and all of a sudden, holy cow, you know, there's one flying overhead.
Yep, and then
that was an excellent scene.
We have some visits from the Stone Men.
Yeah, which is another awesome shot. I thought it was almost like a horror film shot.
Yeah,
because you see the dragon flying away, and then over Tyrion's shoulder, you see this Stone Man just stand up and then just jump right in the water, and it's just like, ooh, what is that? You know, it was just like pin prickles. But yeah, it's all the Stone Men suffering from the grayscale into the water. And Jorah spots them trying to grab at them and warns Tyrion, don't let them touch you, because that's how they spread the grayscale. However, Tyrion is still tied up by Jorah, so he can't really defend himself. And mm-hmm. eventually he falls into the water and is pulled down by one of the Stone Men, and then it's fades to black. And for a minute there, you think that's the end of the episode. Like, oh my God, did Tyrion just die?
I thought that was in. I go, they're not doing this to us. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, but thank God it comes back, and you see Jorah shaking and waking Tyrion up on the beach. And then they realize they have to walk now to Meereen, but from the shot they give us, it seems like it's not too far away, even though it really is. But yeah, Jorah asks him, did the Stone Man touch you? And Tyrion says no. Sadly, you see Jorah lift up his sleeve in secret to see he has a small patch of grayscale now on his arm.
So now that eventually spreads till you're just all completely stone, right?
Exactly.
But it seems, what's her name, was able to be healed. So is there a way to actually heal it, or is that just, you know,
yeah, like
a bit of luck?
This was kind of like a long payoff, because they've been talking about grayscale in a lot of these episodes.
Yeah.
And they did go through that scene with Stannis to show that it can be cured. And so I don't know. Jorah doesn't get it in the books. So I'm hoping that somehow they're going to fix him when they get to Meereen or something.
Couldn't they just cut off his arm?
That's what I thought too. It's just a small little patch right there. I think that's the first thing I would have done, is just get a hatchet or something and just cut off the arm. But it's a good question.
Because that was what I thought. You'd just chop it off.
Yeah. Maybe he doesn't want to be like Jamie, I guess. I don't know.
So. Closing out the episode, a really action-packed, but and still setting up episode. But yeah, pretty crazy.
Pretty crazy. I thought that was a good episode. I can't believe, like I said, you said it earlier. I can't believe we're halfway done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Michelle. it is going by fast, but like, it's a good storytelling episode. It's just a perfect episode, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's get into our listener feedback. We do have a phone call this week, so why don't we get into it?
Woo-hoo! All right!
All right, here we go.
You shall receive. All right.
Here we go.
Hi, guys. This is Priscilla from New Jersey, just calling in about the Game of Thrones podcast. And I just wanted to add some points that I wanted to talk about. And it was pretty cool to still see that Daenerys has some Dothraki men with her. It seems like she's a bit more confident when she was with her dragons. And when we went to the wall, I was trying to figure out who sent the letter to Maester Aemon about Daenerys. And they keep talking about him being sick, and he's saying how close to death he is. I hope he's not going to die. And let's see what else. I'm looking through my notes. It was pretty funny how Stannis Baratheon kind of corrects one of the brothers at the meeting when he says, I think he said something like, there's not enough or there's less than, and he's kind of just mummered like it's fewer. And so, yeah, it was very strange when I saw, when the old lady came back inside of Sansa's room and she says to light up a candle at the highest tower in, at the window in the highest tower in the one of the castles that's like broken down. How's she gonna get there? Not too sure how that was gonna work out. And holy shenanigans, Fat Walda speaks. I feel really bad for her. Ramsay might push her down the stairs. And poor Gilly with all her questions. And poor Sam. He needs more patience with answering all those questions. And is it just me or the Grey Worm and Miss Sandy relationship? I don't really feel a connection. I kind of felt worse, and I kind of felt a little, you know, sadness for the Unsullied who went to the prostitute just to get, you know, some sort of comfort. And how do you go through Old Valyria? Everybody's been talking about that's where the Stone Men go, and not be prepared for perhaps a Stone Man to come out of nowhere. Very strange. But Tyrion's face when he saw the dragons was priceless. So that's pretty much it. Once again, Priscilla from New Jersey, and have a great day. Bye.
All right, thank you for that call.
Fantastic call.
Yeah, fantastic call. Great question, great insight. You really paid good attention to the show. And there's some things here that I don't want to address, actually.
great call, but I can't talk about it.
Yeah. The Maester Aemon thing with the letter, I'll address it a little bit, but in the book, he is not at Castle Black when he gets this news, because Castle Black doesn't really get a lot of news. You just get the little scripts of paper from Ravens that are usually from King's Landing, and that's it, or from like Winterfell. So he's actually not in Castle Black when he receives the news of Dany. And so that's why it's different from the books and the show. And I don't want to address where he's at because they might actually show it and later in this season or maybe next season.
Okay.
Yeah, I love Stannis also correcting the etiquette of fewer versus less. And it just shows that he's well-educated. But so you're the old lady in Winterfell. He's like, oh, yeah, I already addressed this earlier. It is the broken tower that's in Winterfell that Cersei and Jaime were having sex in season one and that Bran fell from. So you can get to it. It's just it's a tower that's very, very old and no one lives in it anymore. So okay. But you can get to it.
So there's still stairs you can climb up and.
Yes, exactly.
She's not going to climb on the outside like Bran did, right?
No, Bran just loved to climb. He climbed all over Winterfell, and he knew all the weaknesses of Winterfell, of like how if an invading army wanted to get in, he knew everything because he went all over the place.
He didn't know all the weaknesses.
I guess not, no.
He didn't know that you could look in a window and get pushed out.
That's true. Yeah, well.
Allegedly pushed out.
Allegedly, yeah. And then, yeah, and she's dead on about Melisandre and not Melisandre, but Missandei and Grey Worm because it's like I said, she's 12 years old in the book, and he's a eunuch, so it's something they wrote in there, I guess, just to show two characters that needed more to do. But I mean, she's right. She's absolutely right. It's forced. It's awkward because I mean, so you know, it's,
so you know, it's happy just, you'd just be happy if they just killed them off or just did away with those two characters, right?
No, I mean they're useful because basically she is Danny's translator because she was right. The slave, the Unsullied slave owner's translator. She knows all the languages of the Eastern world, so she's there to help Danny in that aspect, that with things that Danny doesn't understand, like culture and language.
Okay.
So she has her purpose, but she's a very small role in the books.
So she's her C-3PO.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 1 million forms of communication.
And etiquette.
And etiquette.
Nice. But no, really great call. Thank you for calling in.
And I agree with her on the dragon.
Yeah.
It just was a great shot. Great scene.
Muy bien. All right. You guys ready to get into what happened in the books, stays in the books?
Sure.
Is that what you're calling it now?
Yeah, whatever it's what it's called this week. All right, here we go. Nick, what do you have for us?
All right. A lot of the stuff is actually quite accurate. It's just rearranging of how they want to tell elements of the books in different times. Like, at the wall, Tormund Giantsbane is never actually captured by the Night's Watch. He actually is one of the people that escapes the Battle of the Wall. And so he's already the leader of the wildlings in the north of the wall. And John actually sends Mance's wife, Val, to find Tormund and bring him south. But they left out Val for a lot of reasons. And also in the books, Mance isn't dead. So, but
okay,
I'll just go ahead and tell you that because, like, Mance actually is burned alive, but it's not him. It's someone that Melisandre put like an illusion over, and then they find out that Mance is actually still alive. But they're not doing that. They're not doing that in the show. So
interesting. Okay.
Shireen and Selyse Baratheon do not accompany Stannis on his campaign to conquer the North. They actually remain at Castle Black. So I wouldn't be surprised if in a future episode they come back for some reason. I don't know why, but
yeah,
maybe winter comes. I don't know. also, yeah, to get to the kill the boy line, which is important. It in the book, Aemon is referring to his younger brother Aegon, because Aemon was the third son of the king, and he was supposed to be king, the maester at the wall, the old man. He was supposed to be king, but he was already had taken his Night's Watch vows, and he was a maester. So he felt like John does, duty bound to the Night's Watch. So the king, the throne went to his younger brother Aegon, who is in the Dunk and Egg Tales, which take place 100 years before A Game of Thrones. And Aegon was this little boy who was really sweet and innocent, not like Tommen, sweet and innocent, but he just. He had a kind heart, and mm-hmm. that was his advice to his brother as well. Back then, it was like, you must kill the boy if you want to be king. You can't have mercy on everyone. And a lot of the troubles that got the Targaryens into trouble spurned from Aegon being too kind to people. So
okay.
that's what. So if Aemon actually became king, they might still be in power.
It's possible. But, I mean, the Mad King was mad. Of course, the Mad King comes from Aegon's line, not Aemon's. But that's what he's saying, though. I'm comparing you to my brother. So, you know, just be a strong man and you'll be fine. But don't be indecisive, is what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, it's fine for the show. It works fine. But, like, people who read and understand, especially the Dunk and Egg Tales, which are really good. They're hard to find now. They're supposed to come out with, there's supposed to be 12 of them written, and 3 are written right now. And they're supposed to put out all 3 of those into one book sometime this year. So they're only 100 pages each, so you guys could read them pretty quick. They're actually really fun little books.
Even you guys could read them.
Even you two who can't read.
Even
read
Jack.
Those two. Yeah.
You can read Jack. I mean, I know bald guys don't like to read. So,
well, it's a reflection off the pages. It's just too much. Yeah.
All the grease on the pages.
You know. It is. It's tough.
Okay, yeah. And Marine, Hisdar. How'd you say it, Jake?
Yeah, Hisdar. Yeah.
Hisdar, yeah. is very different in the books. In the books, he's a very influential person. He's amongst the citizens, and he is really powerful. And he makes a deal with Danny in the books. He basically says, if I can get the Sons of the Harpy to stop killing people, they won't kill anyone within 90 days, then you have to marry me. And so she agrees to this. But that makes the reader really kind of suspect him, because it's like, oh, how all of a sudden can you just promise her 90 days without violence? You know, like, what's the angle here? Because he wants power, and that's what you think the whole time. You're like, oh, this guy's he's secretly behind all this, you know, and now that he's doing peace, he's going to be the king. And she doesn't agree to reopen the fighting pits until they get married, and it's a gift to him, saying like, oh, here, you know, you wanted it for so long, you begged for it. Here's my gift to you. We can reopen the fighting pits.
Oh, okay.
So it's the same thing, but it's just a slightly different thing. In Winterfell, the dinner scene with Walda Frey announcing her pregnancy is new to the show, but this is how the producers are getting back to these rumored stories about Ramsay being cruel, the way that he's always been, which you've seen him being cruel to Theon. But the rumors are in the books is that every time Ruse has had a child, Ramsay has always killed it.
So
they're getting back because he doesn't want any male heir. He doesn't want any competition. So I think this is just the way the producers are kind of introducing this into the show to say, like, Ramsay is now – something bad is probably going to happen to Walda Frey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that the caller was right, you know. It's like, oh, she's smart. And then with Jorah and Tyrion, this scene actually takes place earlier in book four with Tyrion and a group that was hired to take him from Pentos down to Volantis before Jorah kidnaps him. In an old ruined city that actually it looks like that in the show. Because Volantis actually is supposed to be flowing with lava and still smoldering, and that's why people don't go through it. It's because no ship has ever made it through it, because most likely you will die.
Okay.
So they're setting up all this Stoneman stuff, so it just made sense to have another character that you knew, like Jorah, instead of having these other characters you had to be introduced to, doing it after Jorah and him met. So it from a producer show aspect, it was a good move on their part.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, the person who gets Grayscale is actually another character named Griff. And anyway, it doesn't matter. Jorah never gets Grayscale on the show. Let's see here. I guess that's it. Yeah, that's it. So that's all I've got written down, but I've got it here all jumbled.
Nice.
I was a little disappointed, but I'm glad that they are introducing these scenes into it now, because there was like a long section in the book of Tyrion going downstream to Volantis, but then it just kind of skips over from Volantis to Meereen. So you're like, oh, so it makes sense to fill it in somewhere.
How far are they along in the books as far as the show? I mean, is the show caught up with the books, or is it still?
Well, I think it's parts are and parts aren't.
Yeah, they're interweaving it in different times.
Just kind of stalling for him to finish the book? Is that, the series?
Oh, I'm pretty confident that 90% of the things that are in the books will be done this season.
Okay.
There could be some stuff with Sam and Master Aemon and a few other little things that they might wait till next season, but everything else at the end of A Dance with Dragons should be covered by the end of this season, okay. I would imagine. And also, did you guys notice? Go back and watch the Valyria scene, and when they show the bridge for the first time, you can actually see all these little stone men on the bridge, frozen there.
I didn't see that. No,
you can just see like a human silhouette there, and you're like, oh, those are the ones that actually have been frozen. That's what I meant to say. The stone men that I remember in the books are very different, also, because Stone, they'd made it more interesting in the show, of course, but like they're actually like they can't see because they actually are stone. You know, they're blind. They can't move very fast. They're just concrete men made of concrete. And so if they grab you, it's like you're basically dead. And they're trying to sink the boat. But they're in the show, they kind of made them out to be kind of like zombie-ish. But
yeah, they were pretty agile for stone guys.
For stone guys, that's what I guess. I thought that was strange. Like they can move pretty quick for guys that are made of stone. But
you turned to stone.
It'd have been a little bit boring if you had like a
really slow.
Yeah, I forget what it's called, Invasion of the Body Snatchers type thing.
Yeah.
So, but that should be it for this episode.
Awesome. All right. Well, very cool. All right, guys. Well, that is it for this week's Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. Thank you again for the phone call that we got this week. Let's get Woo-hoo! Some more.
Yeah, get some more. I'll enjoy it.
At 206-309-0311.
Calling time.
Once again, it's 206-309-0311. Calling time, of course, comments and or
theories.
Also, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/Jay and Jack group. We have TV show discussions about a bunch of TV shows, including Game of Thrones. We'll see you guys next week for the sixth episode as we go to the later half of this season. Until then, we'll see you guys later. Hasta luego, and goodbye.
Bye.